Thank you for tuning in to the Postmodern Realities podcast, brought to you by the Christian Research Institute and the Christian Research Journal. I'm Melanie Cogdill, managing editor of the Christian Research Journal. It's December 2022, and you are listening to episode 320, which is a conversation about the anime film Demon Slayer Kimetsu no Yaiba Mungen Train. On this episode, I'm joined by Dr. Philip Tallon, who is an associate professor of theology at Houston Christian University. He is also the author of the book, The Poetics of Evil. Phil has written an online exclusive film review article for the Christian Research Journal. His article is called Slaying and Redeeming Demons, Understanding the Anime Film Demon Slayer. Our subscribers can read his review for free at our website, equip.org. Every subscription receives online access to our exclusive articles and reviews. If you don't already subscribe to our journal and would like that online access as well as our journal to your door, please go to our website, equip.org. Phil, it's good to have you on again.
Oh, always a pleasure.
Well, we've covered anime a few times here on the Postmodern Realities podcast. So if you are new to the podcast, just started listening, I want to point out to you that in episode 104, back 4 years ago in 2019, we did Unpacking Anime's Thematic and Spiritual Depth. And then in 2021, we covered the anime series Dr. Stone. So if you have interest in other anime series, you might want to check those two episodes out. But anime really is probably the biggest export from Japan, really has created this huge community worldwide. I mean, people from all different kinds of countries and cultures love Japanese anime. And of course, it's spawned a lot of conventions where people like to dress up as their favorite anime characters. But this particular movie that we're going to be talking about really is a little bit more like an extended episode of this TV series based on the manga of Demon Slayer. And back when this was released in October 2020 in Japan, came to the United States later, it became the highest grossing anime film and also one of the biggest Japanese films, period, of all time. So there is a huge interest in the home country of anime, Japan. It's just very popular, and in particular, this series, Demon Slayer. So why is anime very popular? What do you think the appeal of it is?
Well, it's a great question. Its popularity has snuck up on me, right? Because I think about, you know, American cinema, or maybe world cinema more broadly, or American television, you know, and the United States is the world leader in producing entertainment. And so in some ways you kind of lose track of some of these other things. But for young people, when I talk to college students or high school students about the sort of things that they're into, very frequently report, you know, their favorite show is something from anime, they're invested in anime. And for people who are into consuming anime series or manga, they often find that they consume a lot of it, right? And there's a incredible volume of well done, you know, sophisticated, entertaining anime out there. Some of these series are incredibly long, hundreds and hundreds of episodes, even over 1,000, you know, for a certain series. And so you can just kind of, there's a sea of entertainment to swim in, whole, you know, streaming services dedicated to it. And surely part of the reason why this has broken through more recently is because of the internet and the breakdown of traditional distribution platforms. You know, now, you know, there's access to almost anything produced anywhere in the world. And Japan has a really high quality animation culture and industry that produces work that's, you know, a whole new world to explore for many young people. And so I can sort of see the reasons why this is taken off. And then I think there's also the kind of the charm and interest of a very different animation style. United States animation tends to be, you know, really focused at children, you know, so between Disney, you know, Pixar, Cartoon Network, other source, Nickelodeon, you find that a lot of the animated products are aimed at the young, but Japanese animation is often very mature, sometimes distressingly so, surprisingly so for Western viewers. And so there's a kind of, wherever you are, different age groups, different genders, you can find a lot of series to connect with. There's an incredible amount of material out there. It's suddenly become much more available, and a lot of it is of really high quality.
I would say we wouldn't endorse all things anime. There's a lot of inappropriate sexualized anime, and there's surprising some very popular anime series like Attack on Titan are extremely violent and dark. So that's just kind of a word of warning. If you just like decide, oh, I'll just start watching this anime, I think you should look into what different anime there is. I know that in the United States, particularly, there's a streaming service that carries most all the Japanese anime called Crunchyroll that you can subscribe to. And I think they have more than 1,000 anime shows. And you were talking about how some of them have many episodes. I think one of the longest running anime shows is One Piece, and I think they're over 1,000 episodes. So if you were to start that today, it would take a lot of binge watching to catch up to where everything is current. And they even, again, like Demon Slayer, they even had a film that came out that was very popular this fall from One Piece. I think it was called Red or something along those lines. But, you know, how should Christian viewers, because there's, like you said, it's so popular, a lot of Christian kids and young adults really enjoy anime. How should they approach anime as they think, okay, I'm going to get into it, or I like animation, but I've never thought of Japanese anime, and you know, they're listening to this episode or catch one of our past episodes and they're curious about it. You know, what are some of the things that they should consider before viewing it?
Yeah, well, of course, as you mentioned, you know, one of the things that people who are only accustomed to the kind of Western animation may not realize that Japanese animation is not, you know, exclusively for children. So discerning parents out there, you know, beware if a kid says, oh, what are you watching? Oh, it's this cartoon show. You might want, oh, okay, what is this in particular? Because, you know, perhaps they're watching something which is much more violent or suggestive than you might feel comfortable with normally. Just because it's animation doesn't mean that it's for children. But, you know, on a bigger scale, kind of what should Christian viewers bear in mind, aside from these matters of, you know, kind of purity and so forth, I think that it's a real opportunity to kind of engage in intercultural dialogue and learning. A lot of anime is heavily influenced by Western themes, and so not everything is a window into the heart of Japanese culture and religion. But it is interesting. I just spent a semester here going through and watching anime and talking about religious elements from a wide variety of shows. And you do see some notable differences between Western style storytelling, which is so influenced by Christianity and the Christian thought world, and anime, which is influenced more by Eastern religion, especially kind of Japanese religious culture. And, you know, you notice these differences. Some of the conflicts are quite different, where Christianity tends to be very dualistic with a kind of there are good forces and evil forces that are battling out. And we think in the end, the good will triumph, right? And we want to be on the side of the good. And so this is what informs, you know, Star Wars and Harry Potter and, you know, many of our other kind of iconic stories that we follow. But you find in Japanese, you know, storytelling that there's a more non-dualistic, you know, account where there's sort of the conflict is less between kind of good and evil, maybe more focuses on some impurity that's attached to a person that has to be taken care of, or that there's just this proper harmony has to be restored, and that there's a kind of a default state of harmony that can obtain if the hero just does certain things. So you do see different kind of ways of understanding the world through the styles of storytelling. You also find notable differences in, even though you might have kind of similar figures occupying a kind of a common space in Western and Eastern stories, you do find that their meanings are quite different. So for instance, the demons and Demon Slayer aren't the kind of evil spiritual forces that we tend to think of in Christian theology. They're rather more like the Oni, or basically kind of animistic monsters that occupy Japanese folklore. So they're very different. So sometimes even though the sort of language is the same or the role in the story is the same, the underlying reality is quite different. So Christian viewers, I think, will be well served as they're kind of watching anime to sort of to look for aspects of Eastern religion and culture that might kind of shape the storytelling as a way of just becoming more aware of how Asian culture works.
I know when that I was first getting into anime. I don't watch a lot of anime, but someone suggested, "Oh, you should watch a Studio Ghibli film," way back in the day. I was surprised at some of the themes. They were pretty serious. I thought this was going to be like a Pixar cartoon, and there was like death of parents and different things. And the other thing that I did notice was the Eastern religious worldview that came through. So I remember watching Princess Kaguya that they did, and it is just straight up Buddhism. So that might be different for some people who maybe they didn't study Eastern religions in college or something like that. So how is some of the Japanese religious elements really different from Christianity that people are going to notice if they start watching some of these anime series or movies?
Yeah, so I think you can observe a few different features that stand out. So Japanese religion is not just a kind of a single dominant religion, but has a mixture of different religious elements mixed in. So one of those is Shinto, which is have a kind of an animistic picture where there are sort of lots of different sorts of spirits in things. And these sort of spirits are sometimes referred to as kind of gods, but they're certainly lesser gods, even much smaller than the kind of the gods, say, of Greek mythology. They're found in nature. So they're really almost more like kind of spiritual presences that arise from nature. And so you see that, for instance, if you watch Hayao Miyazaki's Spirited Away, you have all of these different spirits that are connected to natural things. There'll be a river spirit that's polluted and corrupted by the sort of the industrial world, and it has to be purified, and then is sort of able to then inhabit its life as the pure river spirit once again. Or there'll be a radish spirit, or the spirit of some place in some other way. And so you have these, this kind of connection of spiritual entities toward natural things. And so in that regard, there's a very kind of heavy emphasis on the natural. There's also, you find in Japanese religion, a kind of a tendency to see in the importance of inhabiting kind of an appropriate sort of place or order. So within Shinto, there's this kind of notion of the wa, right? And that's a kind of an underlying harmony that you don't want to disturb. And that very much then kind of leads to a sense of there being kind of people having their place. And it changes the kind of hero that you might celebrate. So instead of someone whose goal is to kind of completely disrupt the world and sort of everything in order to sort of bring about change, the goal may be to sort of bring things more into harmony, to set things right again, or to sort of stay within your appropriate spot. And that can then carry over to animism as well, where you have sort of not encroaching into the wrong space, having respect and deference for nature. There's another kind of element to keep in mind, which is that I think that when we talk about comparing worldviews or comparing religions, we sometimes think as if there are just different sorts of totalizing accounts of the entire universe and that they're competing with one another. But that's really a very Christian way of thinking about religions, because Christianity and Judaism are these sort of totalizing accounts that explain nature, sort of everything, the history of the world, God, where we fit, and then they make total claims on the individual within that. So you sort of belong, as it were, entirely to God, and that other religions then are competing with your religion for pride of place. But Japanese religion is distinct, which is that it tends to be, in some sense, kind of syncretistic, which is that you can sprinkle in some Buddhism, you can sprinkle in some Shinto, maybe even throw in some Christianity into the mix, and that all of these can sort of exist side by side. So one scholar of Japanese religion sort of describes it as if in China the religion is like a soup pot, where everything goes into the soup and then gets kind of all cooked in together. In Japan, it's more like a bento box or something, where you have these sort of distinct little offerings. And you pick a little bit of this and a little bit of this and a little bit of that. And that's a bit of how Japanese religion tends to function. So you have kind of discrete religious elements that then sort of function. And that's part of the reason why I think Christians have had a harder time communicating with people sort of in the Japanese world, is that they want to make totalizing claims for the Christian religion, where that's very foreign to the already standing practice of Japanese religion and culture, which is that to kind of come in and make these sort of claims disturbs the wa, right? You're upsetting the way the thing is going. If you can find a way to fit in as just kind of another smaller offering, then it'll work. But has a harder time coming in and making these grand universal claims in the way that Christianity or Judaism or Islam do.
Well, we hope that you have had a wonderful Christmas holiday this past weekend. And if you received some money for Christmas instead of a gift, I'd like to suggest that you give a gift to yourself for the entire year of 2023, and that's a subscription to the Christian Research Journal. For $33.50, you get the print issue to your door, and you get access to all of our online exclusives, like this review of the anime film Demon Slayer. So head on over to quip.org to go do that. And we'd also like you to help us out. You might be on break or taking vacation, have a little bit more time, and can give us a rating or review at Apple Podcasts, which is the main place that people review podcasts. And if you could go there and give us a starred review, that literally will take only seconds. But even better yet, just think of a sentence or two about why you listen to the podcast and what you like about it, and recommend it to others. When you do that, the more ratings and reviews that we have, the algorithm thinks that people are interested in this podcast and will suggest it to others. So we'd ask that you'd help us out by doing that. But really, you can just tell a friend about it or put a favorite episode onto any of your social media accounts and share those. And we thank you for your partnership, whether you're a subscriber, whether you only have enough in your budget to tip us, which you can do at any landing page at equip.org for any episode of the podcast, or whether you're just telling a friend about the podcast. We are very grateful for all of the ways that you have gotten the word out about this podcast. Now, at the end of the year, which is Saturday, it's the 31st, starting next week, I will do a swag kind of drawing for people who have written us any kind of review between July 1st of this year and the 31st. And you would be entered if you wrote a review for us, and you would get a subscription to the Christian Research Journal, or you could gift it to someone else if you already have a subscription, as well as some other books. So looking forward to picking one of your names for that. And now back to my discussion with Phil Tallon.
Well, that's really interesting, just thinking about how there's this compartmentalization of how spiritual things are perceived. And what is fascinating is Japan has had a Christian witness for quite some time, I think since the 1100s, perhaps. And yet today, in the 21st century, less than 1% of their population is Christian. And the 1% includes everything that we would not consider Christian, like Jehovah's Witnesses and Mormons. So there's just really not much forward movement in terms of converting anyone to Christianity in Japan. So that is fairly interesting. I say that as a third generation Japanese American. And one thing I found fascinating that I said earlier is just this maybe emphasis on portraying life and death, particularly death, in Japanese anime, and also how that is related in maybe familial relationships. I remember, again, when someone said, you should watch some anime, you know, they said, oh, the classic, My Neighbor Totoro, which was made in the 1980s, late 80s by Miyazaki. And when I watched it, again, I was expecting something like Pixar or Disney, and there's just like this heavy, you know, somebody's parent died and all this. And I was just a little bit baffled by it because it wasn't uplifting. It was very serious. It was very sober. And even in this kind of, you know, if you kind of think of a superhero type of thing, you know, type of a theme in Demon Slayer, they're going out there fighting these, you know, demons and these humans that are just kind of training almost like superheroes type of things. But yet so there's so much in this film that has to deal with loss of family and death and parental expectations and things like that.
Yeah, Demon Slayer certainly trades in some serious themes, though it's not a very serious show. The serious themes are mainly pretext for the dramatic and violent narrative that's going to play out. So the entire series tells the story of a young man named Tanjiro, who's a real mensch. He's this the kind of kid who everybody likes when they see him, and he always helps people out. And this is his sort of life before tragedy strikes, as he goes down from the mountain to sell a coal in the village, and his entire family is is slaughtered by a demon, with the exception of his sister Nezuko, who is transformed into a demon herself. And Tanjiro battles with his sister, but then manages to subdue her with his close, you know, familial bond and the kind of love shared between them. She resists this demonic urge to kill him. And then he sets out on this path of redemption, where he's going to work to undemonify her, to turn her back into a human and to find a way. So committed is he to his sister. And this leads him then to undertake training from master swordsmen. So this countryside is populated by, you know, various master demon slayers that they encounter. And the master swordsman helps him to be ready for the trial, to being initiated into the Demon Slayer Corps. But then he also trains Nezuko, his sister, not to feast on human blood and to regard all humans as his family. Treat all humans as you would treat Tanjiro. And there are some incredibly heavy moments, though, that are sprinkled into these dramatic and beautifully rendered kind of eye-popping combats with the various demons that Tanjiro encounters, where the show will frequently kind of cut back at strange moments and intersperse elements of the backstory of the demons, their own traumatic lives, the decisions they made that led them down the path of evil and led them to become the sort of corrupt demons that they now are. And Tanjiro then is able to use these insights that he kind of gains into the persons he's battling them, things he comes to understand about them, as a way to defeat them, but then also as a way to kind of help to provide some healing, you know, in the midst of all of this difficulty. And so it is a really, you know, sort of striking show, especially if you're only accustomed to Western animation. You know, you watch a lot of Scooby-Doo or something like that, or the Aquanauts or whatever, and all of a sudden you're watching this animated show that's gory, that's violent, that's dealing with death. And so in the movie Mugen Train, you have one of the members of the Demon Slayer Corps, you know, sacrifice his life. And so you're dealing with these big, heavier topics. It's not I wouldn't call it a very mature show, but it's certainly a show that's not for kids. And so people who engage with anime should, you know, bear that in mind. But that's part of the reason, I think, why it's really worth examining, is here we find a kind of a different style of storytelling that has a lot of depth, deals with some really big issues and questions. Some other, you know, shows that we watched this last semester, so we spent some time watching this show, Violet Evergarden, which is about a young woman who kind of survives the traumas of war and has to learn how to sort of express human emotions. It's a quite tender show without much action in it, just all dealing with a lot of emotions. There's a wide variety in animated products, and there are other really sophisticated animated movies, Studio Ghibli being the dominant producer of anime for the West. The kind of the most critically acclaimed, the most successful films are made by Isao Takahata and Hayao Miyazaki. Miyazaki being the kind of, I think, above those two, the one with the greatest reputation. And Miyazaki's movies are incredible. I regard him as being the greatest animator to have ever lived, and his works are touching, they're really varied, they're beautifully drawn, they're humane, and they're highly worth checking out.
So you were saying earlier that these demons aren't like what we're thinking of Satan's minions in terms of a Christian worldview, but more like things out of Japanese folklore. And it could be that in the West, it doesn't wrap up neatly and happily, because a lot of our stories are based on, you know, Hans Christian Andersen fairy tales, which have very much morality and black and white and things being told, which are very different from the folklore of Japan. So how does anime, or this particular series, Demon Slayer, really portray the spiritual world that might be different than what we're expecting? Of course, the name for Christians, Demon Slayer, we're thinking, oh, is this person going out and, you know, getting Satan's minions? But it's not really the same kind of way that we think of demons.
Yeah, it's certainly different ontologically, in that they're not primarily spiritual beings. So we tend to think of demons as being these like non-physical entities that are spiritual, and then, you know, they kind of affect and are involved in the physical world, but distinct from it. And the world of Demon Slayer, the demons are are more like kind of corrupted creatures. So they're embodied, though they may have special powers from their blood demon art or, you know, something that different they can do, but they're still very much kind of this worldly beings. And they are led by a kind of satanic main figure, Muzan, who's kind of the top of the demon organized crime ring, though not all demons are necessarily a part of this group. And Muzan is, you know, kind of dresses like Michael Jackson and is, you know, is able to walk in the midst of humans and is a shapeshifter. But the demons that we encounter are, you know, more like monsters that, you know, have been kind of corrupted and turned, perhaps due to their own vice, or not all of them are highly redeemable. But there is a, as far as the way that the demons are portrayed, I think there's actually really a quite lovely and resonant theme of the possibility of redemption in kind of these monsters that Tanjiro encounters. They've become so corrupted, most of them, that they have to be destroyed, right? They've lost whatever that kind of part of their humanity that enable them to cease to be a monster, but there's still something kind of there that can be redeemed, and Tanjiro sees this and works to address that. And so I think that as Christian viewers, we see that and we go, oh, okay, yes, we identify with that. When we encounter people who seem very wicked or very lost or very fallen, we still look for ways to kind of rekindle in them sort of the good that God intends for them, or to help them kind of come back to the truth. And so that redemptive impulse is present in, you know, for Christians, and it's also a key part of Demon Slayer. So I think that's one of the better aspects of the show, the kind of more laudable things. I would be very happy for people to become more like Tanjiro and to recognize sometimes you have to oppose people, but that's not because you wish them ill. You may still wish the best for them, but because they're currently in a state where they're opposing you. So you can mete out justice because of their wickedness, but still hope for their redemption and hope that mercy is given to them.
So what does this particular anime say about good and evil? Because usually Eastern religious views of good and evil are not the same kind of category that we would talk about it from a Christian worldview. And also, how does it view the soul? Because that's also different than we would kind of describe what the soul means in a Christian worldview.
Yeah, no, it's a good question. I mean, Demon Slayer largely, I think, is kind of operating with a convertible comprehension of basic good and evil. And I think everybody everywhere has a kind of a basic default for understanding of there being certain things that are right and wrong. We see great commonality across many different world religions, between, you know, Egyptian religion and Hebrew religion and Confucianism and so forth. There are a lot of these shared moral insights. And I think those are put into our hearts by God, and so we should expect to find that. But the show does have, a more, you know, sort of dualistic perspective, which there are clearly, you know, people who are basically good, and there are people who are basically bad. Though, one of the things that's really notable about the Demon Slayer core is that they almost operate more like sort of like strange minor gods who are much more chaotic or unpredictable than our hero. And so when Tanjiro encounters the Demon Slayer core, they have a goal to slay demons, but they seem to kind of lack, you know, compassion or, you know, sort of consistency. They're driven by this kind of brutal mission. And so they also are threatening and dangerous in a certain way. So both the demons and the Demon Slayer core are kind of a problem for our main characters. So the show certainly wants to kind of create a mixed and complicated picture of the interplay between good and evil. And I think that's a perfectly fine element for a show to portray. That is the way that things are in this world, is that nobody is ever in this fallen world is ever wholly good or wholly bad. And most people are kind of a mixed good organization, still have things that are wrong with them that are corrupt. And so we can recognize that. It's not a good lesson for the very, very young, but I think it's the kind of lesson that a more mature viewer can easily take away. There does seem to be a kind of an account of the endurance of the soul in the show, which is that people seem to kind of go on in some sort of afterlife state. If the demons can be kind of rid of their corruption, then they sort of go on to some sort of happy state, generally speaking. And so there's a kind of a vague, optimistic picture of the afterlife that you find there. Though it's not a major element of the show overall, but it does pop up periodically, especially with a demon that, you know, is slain in a way that's healing somehow and then is able to kind of go on toward happiness.
Are there any other particular things that Christians should, you know about before they even watch the show? Because like we said, Japanese anime is not like watching a Pixar movie or, you know, Looney Tunes or something.
Well, I think, you know, this is a show for a very particular kind of person. So this is part of the mega genre that we might call like shonen style animation, which is basically animation which is aimed at young guys, right? It's sort of a boys show, and then it's a lot of battles and monsters and bloodshed and severed heads and that kind of thing. And so that's, I think, a limiting factor in a certain way. I think there are much more valuable works to consume. So anybody who hasn't yet worked their way through the films of Studio Ghibli and especially Hayao Miyazaki, I would say start there. These are beautiful, nourishing, lovely films that I think you could spend kind of a whole life, you know, contemplating and thinking about and conversing with and gain a lot more. But as far as a well-produced, beautifully animated and decently written show, I think Demon Slayer will be a worthwhile investment of the time for someone who's really interested. So I've watched through both seasons and I've seen the interstitial film. And it's definitely well made. And it also is not going to run forever. So the manga is shorter and has a conclusion. And so we should be about halfway through the entirety of the series, which I appreciate. You know, this isn't a forever investment that you have to make. This is just something that you can watch for a particular period of time. It's also incredibly popular. You see it. I see Demon Slayer stickers on cars all over town. I was in a store and I saw a brand of Demon Slayer lipstick, which I didn't really fully understand, but there's Demon Slayer stuff here, there, and everywhere. And so if you're trying to kind of catch up or watch something in anime that people are interacting with, this is certainly an excellent option.
I do want to let listeners know that, you know, with over 1,000 different kinds of anime shows, especially on Crunchyroll, there's different styles of anime. You mentioned this is really popular probably with younger boys. It's kind of that action adventure with the supernatural in it. But there is anime called slice of life anime, which is a lot of times set in high schools. And so they have like cooking ones or a lot of, you know, kind of teen drama, romance, and those kinds. So there's those kinds of anime too. They're not all supernatural fighting types of shows. So there's genres that, and of course, genres that stay away from those, you know, those sexualized ones.
Yeah, I just watched an interesting, you know, time travel show called Erased that I thought was well done, kind of a crime procedural with a time travel hook. And there's a film that recently watched, very, very well known movie called Your Name that I thought was quite lovely and interesting. It's about a young man and a woman who keeps switching bodies and have to then kind of encounter the other person. They sort of get to know the other person by inhabiting their body. They don't know each other. And then they eventually try and kind of connect and meet up. So there's some really fine animated movies. Japanese animation has reached the kind of a height of sophistication that's equivalent with any, you know, any world cinema, any, you know, any cinema or narrative art that's ever been produced.
I did find that this particular film, the Demon Slayer one on the train, was used both CGI as well as hand-drawn. So it was very well done in terms of the excellence of the actual animation itself. Are there any themes in Demon Slayer that Christians should think about that are worthwhile for them to think about? It's not just supernatural fighting scenes, but there's some things that we could consider that really could be a springboard, especially for people who are students, maybe that listen to this podcast, because as you said, there's so much popularity of anime that there's everything branded anime. I've seen blankets. As a matter of fact, I did give one of my kids a Demon Slayer blanket last year for Christmas. So it's everywhere. And so a lot of kids are watching this. And what are some themes that Christian students could use as a springboard to talk about some serious spiritual issues?
You know, I think, I mean, there are lots of things one can apply. I mean, Tanjiro is a driven kid. He's got a goal in life. It's a laudable goal. And so he's an admirable character. The really striking feature is the degree to which he is a transformative hero, partly because he is so attentive and listening to the other. He cares about those he encounters. So even when he's not battling demons, he sort of sees and connects with and helps people by being fully present to someone else. And I think that is a really valuable lesson, because I think, you know, very often we think we're going to help someone because we've got this good thing we're going to give to them, you know, and we often skip the step where we try and kind of fully attend to someone else. Very often the best thing you can give someone is just to be interested in them, to hear them, to listen carefully to what they're saying. In that way, you show that you love them, right? You care about their good by attending to their distinctive situation and personality and character. So yeah, I think that's a good example, and that it doesn't have anything to do with slaying demons. You don't have to be good with the sword in order to listen.
So overall, would you recommend that Christians check out anime? Is it something that they should give a shot and watch a film, or maybe, I don't know, some of the series are so long, but if they enjoy a, like the Demon Slayer film kind of gets you right in the middle of the series. Like I said, it's sort of an extended episode, but is it worth investing a little bit of time to try to check out?
It is. I mean, if you use entertainment and narrative art at all as a kind of a window into what's going on, then I think we just have to be aware of anime now. It's a part of American entertainment. And if you've got young people in your life, they're probably invested in it, or at least highly aware of it. And there's some really beautiful and good work that's just worthy of contemplation in and of itself. And that's such is the case with most world cinema. One of the wonderful things about consuming international art is that very often the kind of the stuff that makes it over is just like the very best stuff, right? That's not really the case with anime anymore, because there's so much that we're consuming. But if you want to just, yeah, if you haven't seen Spirited Away, highly recommend it. Not only is it well and beautifully made, but it's really different. It's a really different film with a lot of kind of different assumptions and modes of operation, and it will just kind of blow your mind and take you outside of your normal narrative comfort zone. And that's, I find that to be a very valuable experience.
Well, now on a much lighter note than our discussion here, I have a question for Phil, which kind of is just related to this episode. Is there anything else in anime that you would recommend for someone to watch besides the ones that you have, or something that they should check out beyond Demon Slayer?
Well, yeah, I think I already blew a lot of my recommendations, which I recommended Erased and Your Name, and then I recommend the films of Studio Ghibli. I haven't mentioned amongst those, so if somebody has young children that are listening to this, I recommend My Neighbor Totoro and Kiki's Delivery Service as just beautifully made films. Kiki's Delivery Service is set in this kind of fantasy west, and it's about a young witch who travels to a new town and then sort of sets up a shop. She doesn't really have any powers except the ability to fly her broom, and she even loses that power. And it's a beautifully told, lovely story about just kind of growing up. And so I highly recommend checking that out. If somebody's looking for a really kind of gut-wrenching watch, you can check out Takahata's Grave of the Fireflies, which is possibly the saddest animated film ever made, about children surviving in the midst of, in Japan and during the Second World War. And it's unlike anything else that you'll watch. There's a really nice version of it for free on YouTube, nice high resolution. But there's a world out there. I'm not a fan of some forms of anime. I find Dragon Ball Z and Pokemon and a number of other things that people try and press on me to be kind of a waste of time. There's a lot of that material, but it's not particularly valuable. But if you can't do it, you couldn't do any worse than just watching Studio Ghibli's products. If you don't like that stuff, I don't know what to say.
Yes, the Miyazaki films are kind of like one-offs. They're not like the series that we talked about today. And from that list, I would recommend Princess Mononoke and also Ponyo. And people might, if you already have a subscription to HBO Max, I believe that all of the films can be streamed there. Otherwise, unfortunately, you'll have to purchase them because you can't just rent them on Apple or Amazon Prime.
That's right. There is a Studio Ghibli hub on HBO Max, and Grave of the Fireflies is not on there, but Princess Mononoke, very interesting. Also a very, like Spirited Away, kind of a very Eastern film, even within Miyazaki's own work. Some of his works are more Western, but this is very much in the world of Japanese folklore and kind of, again, operating within that non-dualistic kind of framework. They're antagonists, but they're really no villains in the film. You kind of have people just operating out of different agendas. It's very interesting.
And I would say that if one of the films that Phil has recommended is not available, you can usually purchase them and they are worth owning. So I would recommend that as well. Well, Phil, it's great to have you once again on the Postmodern Realities podcast.
Melanie, it's always a pleasure. Thank you for having me.
You've been listening to episode 320 of the Postmodern Realities podcast, brought to you by the Christian Research Journal. And today we've had a conversation with Dr. Philip Tallon of Houston Christian University about the anime Demon Slayer. And he has written an online exclusive review article for us. And his article is called Slaying and Redeeming Demons, Understanding the Anime Film Demon Slayer. And our subscribers can read his article for free at our website, equip.org. And if you subscribe, you can also have access to this online exclusive review. Stay connected with the Christian Research Institute and all the new content we have coming your way. The best way to do that is to head on over to our website, equip.org. There you will find thousands of free resources right at your fingertips, from articles to video to audio, and it's all for free. You'll find our podcasts hosted there, as well as the Bible Answer Man broadcast, which is hosted by CRI President Hank Hanegraaff and streams live every Monday through Friday at 6 p.m. Eastern. In addition, you don't want to miss out on subscribing to Hank Unplugged, which is the podcast of Hank Hanegraaff. And in that podcast, he has really in-depth, free-flowing, essential Christian conversations with some of the most interesting, informative, and inspirational people. And in addition, he has a new series on his podcast feed called Hank Unplugged Shorts, which Hank goes into the headlines in the mainstream media and refutes a lot of those cultural issues that we have in these short podcast episodes. And there's quite a few of them. You don't want to miss out on them. Now, if you want to find some of this at other places where it's all in one place, really subscribe to our YouTube channel. It's a great way to get all of our content there, our podcasts there, and different individual questions theologically that people have that Hank answers at our YouTube channel. Now, you might be thinking to yourself, I don't know how to subscribe to YouTube. I don't have a YouTube account. Well, actually, you might just have a YouTube account. If you have a Gmail address, you have a YouTube account. Just log into YouTube with your Gmail address and search for Bible Answer Man channel, and please become one of our subscribers. In addition, if you see that bell icon right there on our front page, please click that, and every time that we have new content, you will receive a notification that new content is up on our channel for you to be able to consume. So thank you so much for the ways in which you partner with the Christian Research Institute. We are grateful for you listening and reading and watching.